and welcome to Crushed by Margaret K. Bourne-Smith, the podcast about the glory and grossness of unrequited love. My guest today is the fabulous actor, director, singer, choreographer and BSc Ons in psychology, Mina Anwar.
Hello. Mina. I love that. I've never heard it like that as an introduction. But
I'm hoping your degree in psychology will help us to analyse.
I hope so. Yeah. Well, you never know. It certainly made me analyse myself yesterday, thinking about my crushes in the past. So there you go.
Right. Go on then. What have you come up with?
My first proper crush was on... So I was thinking about it, thinking, God, I hope they like don't listen and then I'll get away with stuff. Was on my geography teacher actually at school at I went to Moorhead High School in Accrington. I'm from Accrington in Lancashire.
Lovely.
And he looked like Magnum. PI, that's why. But he was like ginger hair.
And
not
Magnum.
Like because I had a little bit of a Tom Selleck like crush as well.
So was it a big thick ginger moustache?
Well, looking back at it now, it probably was not quite as big as I was very small, obviously. Not like that. So in perspective.
Size of me
and size of the stash. But then so did Tom Selleck. I think Tom Selleck's looked like ridiculously enormous, but he was very beautiful.
He does look enormous, doesn't he? He sort of looks like he's made of a cliff or something.
He's so side of a house. Huge. Yeah, he was like massive. But he was like he did football and sports.
Tom Selleck or
no the geography teacher.
What's your geography teacher called?
I'm allowed to say.
Well,
he's a very ordinary name. Colin Simpkins, Mr. Simpkins.
Colin Simpkins, that could not be more sitcom.
He couldn't, and that's true. And my geography teacher looked like Tom Selleck. That's just got everything there. There's a pitch right there.
Yeah.
And the small Asian girl having a crush on him.
Hiding in his
working class, Lancashire comprehensive school. That's got everything made for it, sitcom.
Yeah.
But he was so brilliant at teaching as well. He was just a brilliant, just one of these teachers. You know when you have teachers that you think have always been your champions? And what people didn't know about me, because I was very academic at school, very serious, and I didn't really crack a joke until I was about 17, because I was took everything very seriously. Mm. But I've been singing since I was like 3. So all I ever wanted to do was tell stories through song and do science. That's literally all I ever wanted to do, really.
Interesting combination, though, isn't it? The sort of, you don't get many show-off scientists. I mean, there are some.
There aren't. Well, yeah, I suppose Montessori, she was like quite an elaborate.
Yes.
And I remember in my psychology degree doing one of my talks was about her, because she was really into how, art helps us to understand the world, and that maths used in a more functional way can help you to navigate your life more than, doing. So she's do it on to do with how you count things, how you look at things in life, maths, rather than, doing sums and things.
Mm.
So she was pretty fabulous, actually.
Yeah.
So back to my singing story is that he used to literally come and see me sing.
So how old were you at this point when he was
teaching
you?
I went to comprehensive when I was at 11 in Accrington, and he was my geography teacher, I think, from like 12, 13. So Mr. Simpkins used to... He was quite surprised that I sang as well as that I was like really into science.
You were at least a double threat.
Yeah, at least a double threat. And then after that, I did actually train in contemporary dance. So I did become a little bit of a...
But did he teach all-rounder. You... Did he teach you PE as well as geography?
No, he was just geography, because I think he used to do like the football and stuff with the lads. But I remember him hearing me sing once and just saying, I didn't know you could do that. And then he said, yeah, you're really good at all this academic stuff, but I think you should do something with that.
Wow.
And because it was quite extraordinary.
Your crush led you to go into this career.
And he really helped
because
me.
Because Mr. Simpkins told you to.
Well, that's it. And also, I think it was a lot to do with the fact that he helped me understand that there was a bit of expression in me that I wasn't actually letting out, because I didn't really have that. And coming from a kind of, I suppose, a more of a Muslim background, that those types of things, and they're not necessarily encouraged. So, but we were doing them as kids. I mean, I've got like 5 sisters and 2 brothers, and we used to have little bands. And my brother was like self-taught guitar.
Yeah.
And I used to like write lyrics, Rupert Brooke lyrics, to tunes he'd put together. It's like poetry. Or I'd just learn like Cocteau Twins songs and try to sing like Elizabeth Fraser. It was just really quite like looking at whose voices I loved.
Yeah.
And then trying to find an outlet to how they expressed, how they told stories, actually.
And he gave you permission?
Permission, or just helped me navigate that I had an artistic path that I couldn't realise, because I was just like doing my maths, doing my science, doing English Lit, really interested in words and lyrics. But I didn't know that my singing was quite brilliant in that way.
Yeah. And also, it's not just about being brilliant. It's also about knowing that that could take you somewhere. It's not, yeah. you know, that that's an option, that there's
yeah.
something
and there wasn't
in
any
future yeah, no, where you could use that.
Well, exactly, because second generation, working class, you know, come from an immigrant family, understanding that maybe there was quite an unusual career path to be taken that you could do as a living.
I mean, it sounds like you could have done anything. It sounds like you had the capacity to do
yeah,
that all. Do you genuinely think that Mr. Simpkins... I mean, you haven't really sort of said how you felt about Mr. Simpkins.
Well, how I felt...
Like, what well, did he do? What did he give you that other people
I think
weren't?
He gave me space to be myself.
Mm-hmm.
A space to know that I was like... You know, because he knew that I was quite a serious child, I think. But he, like, allowed me to be more slightly quirky. And because I had this mad crush on him, you know, you have that kind of mad flirty thing.
Yeah.
That...
When you say flirty, what were you...
When I say flirty,
yeah.
I think at school, when you've been flirty, all you do is then just make, like, jibes at people, like kids. Like, if you've got, a crush on someone, you just attack them, you know. And I think
it's
class...
It's hard to do with a teacher,
yeah.
isn't it?
Well, in class, and I'd just be really sassy. That
wow.
I would not be sassy. And I just were like, it was like, not me, really. Because I didn't have a lot of confidence in that. So I had confidence in what I did. Like, I was in the debating team. And the girl who went to... Me and Julie Hesmondhouse, we went to school together.
No way.
We have known each other since we were, like, six. And we grew up on the... And, like, she lived up the hill for me. We're both from church in Lancashire, near Accrington. So she was in different classes to me. But we were, like... She became the head teacher, the head girl, but we were like in a little competition together. But I think he just allowed me to kind of be like move forward in a more confident way, but also navigate quite kind of anxieties of being a teenager as well. Because I didn't really know how to talk to boys. I just wanted to do maths and science. So I just talked to boys about maths and science. But with him, I was quite like sassy in the class.
Yeah. So what was it that gave you permission to do that? What did he do? Thinking
I don't know.
Back
I think
on
he
it
found
that allowed
me
you
quite quirky
he found
and
you
funny.
Funny, yeah.
But then he moved me to the back of the class one day because
well,
I was
you have
a little
to,
bit
you still
much.
Have to, Mina.
Yeah.
Come on, you still
and then
to,
I'd still throw like
teacher.
Kind of yeah. And I'd be like he'd say something and I'd be quite sarcastic. You know, and he'd go, oh, you don't have to be so sarcastic, you know, because he had a great sense of humour as well. So I think there's a little bit of my sense of humour that came out with someone who you want to have almost like a banter with.
Yeah.
Which
well,
you don't have
thing.
With teachers.
Yeah, exactly. It's a big, I mean, it's hard enough to find that with a friend, actually,
yeah,
that sort
exactly.
of connection where
Ooh.
You can really make each other laugh. If that happens with a teacher who's like a grown-up with a big tash, then
exactly.
that's, you know,
who looked
come
like
on.
Tom Selleck.
Yeah,
yeah.
Big muscly legs, I'm imagining.
And got like, yeah, yeah, sometimes he'd like wear shorts, which, you know, you just go, oh, God, that's just too much for a teenage girl, isn't it? At school.
When you say, no, I really want to drill down into this. What were you... I was going to say, what were you feeling when you looked at his legs? I don't know if that's too specific.
Yeah,
like, you're
really?
Saying, I think you've really nailed the fact that crushes allow the, all of this identity and create that. But when you were a kid, presumably you didn't have that insight.
No.
You were just thinking, Mr... Is it Simpkins or
yeah,
Timkins?
Yeah, Mr. Simpkins.
Mr. Simpkins.
I like
Mr.
I should have maybe called him Mr. Timpkins so that he wouldn't know I was talking about him. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's like a bit like... It's like an obsession, really. You know, like,
yeah.
watch every episode of, like, Magnum or every episode of... Or every film with James Dean, because I was, like, completely obsessed with James Dean. Or Donny Osmond or people... And also, like, Bollywood films. I grew up on, with Bollywood films. And there was such a beautiful actor called Dharminder, who was amazing. He played the lead in all this. He was stunning. I used to have his post-trauma. And then you go down literally, like, a rabbit hole of these actors or
yeah.
these singers. And with him, I think, because I could see him... At school, when
oh,
we had double jump,
he's not
he was
on your
like
wall.
absolute delight, wasn't it? You know, you where some people just going, oh my God, double geography. And I go, double geography, that's amazing. Thank you so much for that. But he was, so we had like a path between two buildings. And sometimes I'd know what time he'd be walking the path, even though he didn't have geography that day. So I'd just time it so I could meet him in the middle of the path.
Did you bump into him and drop your books?
drop my books, and that's not a euphemism. But I'd just go, hi. And I think sometimes he'd kind of know.
She's always here.
She doesn't even, she's not even in today, you know. And that was just quite delightful. But it's like a kind of frisson, knowing. But then the flip side of that is the utter disappointment, and you feel so crushed, actually. Mm. When they don't appear or they're not there that day.
Yes, because it feels like a rejection, even though it can't possibly be. It's just, you know, they have dental appointments or they're, you know...
They're just doing normal things.
Yeah, and they are not, I mean, hopefully, thinking, well, I hope I'm not being to me.
Well, you don't... What? Well, you hope not. You never know. You know, because some people, I suppose, you know, I don't know, we say that. I mean, it's not about, like, being inappropriate or anything.
No.
But, you know,
listen, they do have favourites, of course.
And also you just get, like, favourite people who, like, kids that just deal with these students. And also, I suppose, in those kind of seminal years of growing up and seeing children from 11 growing into adults at 16, those teachers are so much a part of their journey as human beings, going from like kids to adults. I think part of that, they have a duty of care to try to, I think that's probably what it was, him. And then there was also, we had this amazing history teacher who just made history like alive to me. I think that's why I loved it so much, that he just, you know, everything was like three-dimensional. And he was just that as a human being as well. He was just such like a fabulous human that I think like the crushed nature of them not knowing that you have such an obsession with seeing them.
Yeah, I wonder if he did know. Like, do you think that he'll have been like, I see the way she lights up.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, because like, I don't know if you must do as a teacher think, I've got to be careful here, you know.
Yeah,
because
I mean, somebody's feeling as well. It's like in the 70s. You know, 70s, 80s. 80s was when I was at in my comprehensive.
Yeah.
And we were like, it was working class comprehensive. We had every culture in there. You know, it was really good because you had, you know, I grew up with Asian families, and there was like white families, English families, and there's like Irish people, Jewish people. There's a Jewish girl in our class who, you know, who didn't have to come to assembly. And I wouldn't, now I don't think I would have had to go to assembly. But I really loved something, like I said, because I could sing. So she could just stay in her room, in one of the classrooms. And the other side of that is not understanding culture as much as they do now.
Yeah.
Like not understanding that you're not a vegetarian, but you have to eat like halal food.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's not that every day when they have steak or meat that you have to queue up in the middle of the canteen waiting for fried eggs, for instance. So that has got its own kind of weird, like, way that people didn't understand culture.
Yeah.
And then all you think is, God, I have to stand here.
Oh, God, so excluding.
It so really was. All the Muslims used to stand, and the Hindus as well, like, because they didn't eat, like, cows and stuff. But now, when I think about it now, I think, God, you know, that's really, really ignorant about how people used to... That was, like, in the 70s as well. That, you know, it's like, oh, no, you know, you can't eat that, so therefore we'll just make a corridor and really highlight. It's like putting a spotlight on all the Muslims. It's like really bizarre. I only think about it now and think, God, that was just awful, you know?
Yeah, I know, the things that you just sort of accept as, oh, this is what my school life...
I know, it's bizarre. But he was like, going back to like those teachers, I'm talking about crushing. It's so funny how, you know, because you get so obsessed. I do get quite obsessed. I go down rabbit holes of things.
Yeah, oh my God, and like, with the internet. Yeah. I mean, I'm pleased that the internet wasn't around when I was growing up.
Because then you had to put a poster up.
Yeah, and
then
you had a poster, you had like a weekly magazine that would come out that might have your favourite person on it.
But as much as I was like obsessed with like James Dean or Dharminder or, you know, Rishi Kapoor, these like Bollywood and Hollywood actors, I also had like a mad obsession with Kate Bush since I was like 9 years old. So I had everything she ever made. I used to want to sing like her because that was my, like, that was made to be like, God, I really want to sing like her. I want to move like her. I want to be as free as her. And then I had this VHS tape of her. She did one live show, which was like a little tour. And it was 1979. She did this one. And I played that video.
Did you play it so it went all fuzzy?
Like it snapped. And then it snapped. And you just put a sellotape on. And you had to make sure you take that clip out the back, you know, so no one
taped
over.
Oh, my God.
So
yeah,
you didn't tape Top of the Pops over the top and then go, oh, my God, you just taped over my Kate Bush.
Would you have described that as a crush?
I think so,
like when you, but at the time, would you have done?
No, I just thought I was obsessed.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing, is that there's such a fine line between obsession and having a crush. You know, what is a crush? It's like a an irrational obsession, maybe, on just pursuing that one goal, which is obsession, isn't it? You know, and I can, like, I just recently watched that series Love Life, you know, with Anna Kendrick. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah, no, I haven't
it's
seen it.
It's quite brilliant. And there's a man who's just amazing in the last episode, Ben. His name is Ben. And he's really tall, he's absolutely beautiful. I thought, God, who's he? And then I went down like a complete rabbit hole looking what he's doing. And then I found that he's playing Bob Marley coming up in the new biopic. And I thought, oh, my God, that's amazing. So now I'm going, right, alerts for when that's when that's coming out. And then going, right, what else has he been in? Now I just must watch everything he's been in. Because you just suddenly...
And do you feel like it's the same thing? Like, do you think that you've... learned the difference between the crushes that you had when you were a teenager, and the crushes that you have now. What's the difference between them?
I don't think there's, I don't know what it is. I don't think there's a difference other than the fact that I'm like my partner Dave. We've been together like nearly 19 years, and what I know is that that's like.
Really?
He's the love of my life, and he's a musician, and that's wonderful. Because even, and I'm like a fan of his, you know.
If
he wants
so
to
nice.
Do like gigs and stuff, he's a jazz musician. He's an MD for theatre. He's just brilliant. He's just played with so many different bands, and to me, he's like, if he's doing a show, I just go as a fan of his as well. Even though I get to like live
you
with
him, you get to go home with him at the end,
and
of the
it's
night.
Just amazing.
I mean,
but
that's
I suppose the crushes are. I don't know, I see something brilliant. Maybe it is the fact that they're brilliant in what they do.
Yeah.
Or they make something come alive. Or you see them and there's something that sparks something quite kind of like otherworldly in you.
Yeah. So now, it feels like what you're saying is now you understand, you have your partner that you're But then, did you think... Not that you thought you were going to end up with James Dean, because he was definitely off the table. But were there people that you were like wanting to pursue, that you were imagining a life with?
I think I probably was actually. I was thinking not like with Mr. Simpkins at all. But actually,
no,
there are people
quite pleased
you go,
to hear that.
Oh, I think I'm like when you suddenly get into the industry and you go, oh, I think I might end if I bomb into them, maybe they'll really like me, and then maybe we'll have a relationship. You know, there's things like that.
Yeah. Did you have those on Kids at School? Like with a
no,
well,
I didn't.
You know, the other with
kids
the people,
in my class.
Real people who weren't teachers or celebrities.
No, like just kids at school. Because I just really didn't have any confidence when it came to
the reality,
like boys. So therefore, I just if I was doing, say for instance, this is a bit sad, I know. So, but if I was doing like science homework or something, and I was quite brilliant at science. That if somebody wanted to talk to me about that, and it was like a lad who I really liked or something, then I just continue to pursue them through this homework. Does that make sense to you? So I'd go, oh, do you remember that homework you wanted to do? You know,
God.
Did you remember that
months
question?
Later.
Yeah, months later, I'm going,
do you remember?
You know, do you remember when we did, or then there's that kind of,
do you remember
then there was
the
that kind of rivalry,
table?
You know, that kind of banter where you just want to talk. But I only did it through the prism of things I could talk about quite freely, because I couldn't talk about my strange. I ended up doing a BSc in psychology and becoming an actor. Because I think that's what I wanted to learn, is how to express myself. And I could only express myself through the subjects I was learning about. I didn't have any, what I consider emotional intelligence then, which I do have now. And I like to think now, you know, at nearly 53 years old, that I've become, you know, you've become of service to others by trying to share what you've learned, especially I've been in as an actor and a singer and I started directing when I was 50 as a just a someone who can share my journey through that. So that's 32 years nearly being in this one industry and loving it and understanding the craft of it, the art, but also just understanding that, you know, the game a bit more and sharing the pitfalls a little bit, but also trying to be in process. So I'm never a kind of results.
No, you're not a...
And I'm not that kind of director either.
Yeah.
I'm always in a process.
Yeah, well, I think that's really good to acknowledge that we're all work in progress.
Exactly. I think the process is everything. You know, and spiritually, you know, I started reading lots of things at 15, like the Tao Te Ching or, you know, Jonathan Livingstone. Suddenly I was being opened up to it, like literature, ways of looking at life in a much more less scientific way and much more about what Steiner calls your higher infinity, which is, you know, looking at how all of those things together, your left and right brain firing together like Einstein, gives you your eureka moments. So I just like to think that I've kind of maybe I pursued melding those two things.
Yeah.
So I didn't get stuck in my analysis all the time. That I could just be vulnerable and live more right-brained and allow things to happen that I couldn't control. But my tendencies want to go, oh, maybe I need to understand that why have I got this crush on this person? Or just go, do you know what? Maybe that's just all right, you know?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, like, I don't know if your partner will be listening to this.
Oh, he might.
But I don't know, like, how bothered would he be? Or, you know, if you're talking about developing crushes now and going down rabbit holes and whatever.
I don't think he'd be bothered.
No.
You know, because I get, like, because I think I think artists do that. They get obsessed with, like, practising. He's quite obsessed with practising at the moment.
So you're practising crushes.
You're practising. This is like my...
You're practising your feelings. Yeah.
Well,
he's
like doing piano practice a lot at the minute because he wants to, like, and he's an amazing player, but he's still, like, in process. So to me, if I just go, oh, I really like this, oh, let's go and watch his film, he might not fully understand that it's because I've gone down, like, a Mark Ruffalo, like, you know, path for, like,
good,
6 months.
Yeah.
I do get quite obsessed with Mark Ruffalo, I must say. I don't know what I'd do if I met him. I remember once meeting Steve Martin, who I also have a massive crush on.
Did you work with him?
Or? No, when we were at drama school, we were there to do the fundraising, because I went to Mount View, we did some fundraising for the Globe when they were building it. And they had all sorts of people come over to do, like, this kind of afternoon. We were like the ushers. And there was Anthony Quayle. He was quite stunning. He was quite frail then, old. And Steve Martin rocked up, like, on the stage. They do, like, well, thanks for being here. He had no clue why he was there. He had no idea why he was there.
He's been tipped off
and
a plane
standing,
into this,
like,
place.
On, yeah, exactly. I don't know. He just went, oh, just go to that marina over there and just say something. Say thanks for being here. Welcome. And he was just like a... Like, we were like the ushers at the below the stage. And I just couldn't quite believe he was like there.
In reality?
Yeah, because I used to love... I mean, God, I love Steve Martin so much. And just look at him thinking, why have he, like... And then he looked down at me and just smiled. I thought, oh, my God, I felt like all my Christmases come together all at once. And then not quite knowing what to do after.
I was going to say, did it make you stupid?
Yeah, it made me very stupid. Made very stupid. And, like, even Auntie Quayle, these people who you just, like, loved, especially at drama school, like, came up to me and, like, touched my cheeks and went, hello. And then you just go, oh, no, I don't know what to do.
It's a bit religious, though, isn't it? It's a bit like sort of saints or, you know, it's a kind of, are you coming to heal me?
Why are you touching my face? Like, I don't know whether you get away with touching my face now, but...
But I wonder if these people who are, you know, held up like this, don't know so much about Anthony Quayle, but, like, Steve Martin must know the effect that he has on people.
Yeah.
You know, so many people are obsessed with it. It's not like he's a heartthrob particularly, but a lot of people really love him in a very ardent way. I wonder how much he, you know, whether you sort of sometimes go, I just want to rest from this.
Yeah, no, I'm sure,
not be responsible and
not even now,
have,
like,
that woman's eyes on me. Like,
exactly. Because it's like, all you want, it's like, no, because I'm on telly and I understand that I get stupidly giddy about people I love. I remember once being at the Granada Studios and I was up for a part in something and, like, Ben Kingsley walked, like, in the room. And he was walking towards me, and he seemed to me like he was walking at stupid miles an hour, which was so slow. And then he came, like, towards me. I was thinking, I'm just gonna say,
did you prepare it? How much did you prepare?
And I couldn't. Well, I was there, like, in this wait, preparing for this really big, like, ITV part in this thing, which was brilliant. And he's walking towards me. I'm thinking, and then I started palpitating because thinking, I just want to say to him, I love your work. Because I was an actor and I'm thinking, you need to grow up on certain people or they've inspired you. And he's like, walked, and then he came and sat down next to me in the chair next to me.
Oh, my God. And was he up for a part in
this? I don't know. He was up for something. It was Yorkshire Telly then. I think he was up for something. Yorkshire Telly. I was thinking, wow. And he's just sat next to me, which seemed like an age before I got called in. And then...
you just think, with your mind thinking, going blank, just say, I've got to say something.
Just turn to him and go, I really like your work. I really love you in Candy. And then he got up and he left.
But every it's funny, you're saying those things. I'm like, all of those sounds silly.
And you just think, I don't even know if that's going to come out
exactly.
my mouth.
It wouldn't.
In
it would
the
come
right
out wrong.
Order. Yeah. So I must have thought, I don't know if I was like breathing heavy. Maybe he could like hear me.
Sweating through.
I didn't even think about this thing. It's a really good way of like not being nervous for the job.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can't have been thinking about your lines.
I had no clue that I was going to be able to do that. I just wanted to
just trying to get your heart rate down.
And then he got up and he left because he was his interviews, and I couldn't get it out.
No,
I literally couldn't.
I wonder, because that must happen loads as well. Yeah. And people must say really like slightly incoherent things. Yeah. To you.
Well, it's just, you just become like an idiot, really.
Yeah.
I remember years ago, I did the Vagina Monologues in town, and I was one of, there's only three people in that show. So you do it, you're barefoot, you've got black dress, everyone get paid the same, you all share the same dressing room. And then either side, there's three chairs. So every chair moves. So I was there for quite a long time and then I went did the national tour. So I did it with Harriet Thorpe. And me and Harriet, and then Trudy Styler was in one of the chairs like, for a few weeks. Which had its own things. Everybody she knows is like mega.
Yeah, mega.
So
mega.
You just, and it was at the Arts Theatre. So you just got all, you know, people come up the stairs, Luke Besson, Annie Lennox, you know, Charlotte Rampling, and you go, this is not usual at all, you know. And obviously her husband, Sting, came for his birthday. And thankfully, I have a friend who had just worked with a musician.
Oh, so you had an in?
Well, I had an in, but I couldn't quite. He literally looks like he's made of alabaster and like shines. He's just quite beautiful. He really is like a beautiful man and like a beautiful soul.
Yeah.
Not that
yeah.
I was thinking about that when I saw him. And then she said, oh, Sting's coming. And you go, no, can't go with that. And then he was in the audience. I remember he's in the audience and he's such a lovely man. He was in the audience and he literally looked like he'd brought his own spotlight. Because it was literally like, no, it was sort of be dark. We'll be seeing. And he just
maybe he had. Maybe he had like his jacket.
Yeah,
some
underlighting going on. Yeah.
Can't afford it.
Just slip out of his bag. Go, this is my underlighting. That's why I look so beautiful all the time. And he literally just looked like he had a halo.
Wow.
And then after the show, normally, because Trudy's so fabulous, and she really was like the most fabulous woman, even though she lived the life of a rock star.
Yeah.
Because like every day somebody, her PA would come and go, you know, Jump or Go Chase sent you this to wear if you want tonight, or Armand would send you this. And we all got paid the same. We're all sitting there, me and Harriet going, wow, what is this? This is like a different world.
And what has Jean-Paul Gaultier sent me?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Are you not using that one tonight? Can I borrow it? Are we the same size? No, not at all. You know? And I remember Sting coming back, like, after the show, coming and just standing next to me. And I was trying to, like, take my makeup off. And he's a really small dressing room. He's talking to Trudy. And I just literally couldn't speak or couldn't breathe. And we'd just done the show.
Yeah, I wonder if they have people passing out in front of them all the time as well.
And then I said, oh, and Nitin says hi, because Nitin Sonia just worked with him. And he says to say hi. So I had an in.
Brilliant.
And I made a coherent sentence, I think.
You gave some words.
Some words came out in the right order.
Nithin.
And
no,
he went,
I'm Sting.
Yeah, exactly. And he went, oh, great. Like that. He had a slightly transatlantic accent. So he does, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
And he went, yeah, because it like you that's those that album you made is like really lovely. And then I kind of went, I wish I could make more. And then he literally left the dressing room and he was halfway down the corridor. And I just couldn't help it anymore. I just literally screamed down the corridor and went, I love your work. Like this. Because I thought, you can't let, like, you must let your voice out. People you've met who are, like, fabulous. And he went, just turned around and he went, well, I love yours now.
Oh.
And then I just collapsed in a massive.
Yeah, that's a good response.
That's extraordinary.
Well done, Sting.
Because he'd just seen me.
Yeah,
work.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you go, oh, my God, that's like, I'm so pleased.
And that's why, yeah, I mean, because that could have gone very wrong.
It could have, because I could have literally run down the and looked like
yeah, go into that.
But
I love your
to
work.
To elicit that response, it must have been all right.
Oh, absolutely. And also,
I'm hoping.
No, definitely. But also, it's good that he had that response, because I reckon sometimes even the nicest of people will, yeah, you know, not have heard or be, yeah, just in a weird mood or just say something that doesn't make you,
exactly,
feel great. Because, of course, it's great. You know, Sting loves my work.
Exactly.
You know, it doesn't matter if that's the truth or not. He said that to me.
I remember
had an exchange,
exactly,
now. You know,
I remember when I did Thimbley Line first series, and I was like the first proper like lead role for an Asian woman in a comedy.
Yeah, it's huge.
Mainstream Sony, and who was Northern. I remember going auditioning for Ben Elton, and Ben had no clue that I was Northern, not one clue. I walked in, and I said, "Aye," and he went, "Bloody hell. I didn't know you spoke like that." And then he thought it was hilarious. But remember after the first like series came out, the first episode came out against the Diane interview. It was very interesting.
Oh, wow.
And we had something like stupid, like 12.6 million viewers even out against that interview.
Amazing.
And then he used to send me, you know, because he knows everyone, Ben. So he used to send me like, you know, I said I had a pager then. There was no like email. I had a pager for years.
Your emergency acting.
Yeah, I had a pager.
Roles.
Yeah, exactly. I had a pager. My agent used to come around a pager 4 years after I left in 91. I had no clue. I didn't want a phone. I'm a very low tech woman in the high tech world. And just wanted, I had this pager thinking, pager, that'll do. Then no one can contact me other than the people,
yeah,
I,
yeah,
give,
yeah,
the pager.
You just contact them.
Can you imagine that now?
No.
I wouldn't even,
insane,
know how to use a pager,
no,
now. I'd say. And he, I remember he sending me like little, not texts, because he has stupid, he has a brick phone even now that is like does nothing. Even now, and we've been friends now for like 25 years, he still has like a stupid phone and he doesn't like to, you know, be gone, take pictures on it, nothing. I remember one, he gave me a message saying, oh, I just had a message from George Harrison saying, who's that Indian girl in your show? And I went, George Harrison?
It's asking after,
yeah,
me.
And I said, so George Harrison has just watched me on the telly.
My heart's going
and
now,
and inquired about the Indian girl on your sitcom and said, oh, she's very beautiful and very funny. And then that was
I like
it
that you're
me.
Doing a sort of Liverpudli. You were like, yeah, waggling your head,
yeah,
there a bit.
I
like
was.
Beetle, yeah.
Was that me being an Indian or me being
yeah,
Liverpudli?
Yeah, Indian or Beatles?
It was both, I think, you know, Sergeant Pepper. And I just thought, what's this? Like 7 degrees of separation, isn't it? Then you go, so if I know that he's watching that, then Paul McCartney's watching. And all these people that Ben knows, because he's known people for years. Because Rowan, of course, was also in that. So everyone he knew, Jeffrey Perkins, who was like a god to me. Everyone. And then you don't even think of who's watching you. And maybe one day we'll meet you outside of,
yeah,
thing and go, I can't
and say
speak.
Something stupid.
Yeah, no,
say,
I
love
to,
your work.
Yeah, and even now, like, being in like the Hooniverse, which I am, Doctor Who, and,
oh,
you know,
wow,
being,
yeah,
in Sarah
that's
Jane,
full of...
I mean, that's obsessive. House of Anubis, they're obsessive. You know, people come and they don't know. Like, literally, people like burst into tears at me because I've meant so much to them in their childhood. So I try to like go, oh, it's all right. And I try not to leave them. I try to elevate them, talk about something, or which was your favourite episode, or what was your favourite like character. So I try to allay them, their fears of me being.
Do you think it's because you have an understanding of what it was like,
yeah,
to be?
I think so.
And
I wouldn't like to. Like, I remember people telling stories about when people they've. And I suppose it is connected to crushes, because you do have a crush on those people who have meant a lot to you, your years growing up on the telly or whatever, or novelists or musicians. And what you don't want is when they say don't meet your heroes, and you think, oh, I hope that when people meet me, they think I'm gracious and generous. And I,
yeah,
always like to go to stage door. Like, I'm in Life of Pi at the minute. I don't know when this is going out. I'll be finishing soon. If it's like out next year, I'm not in anymore. Don't go. Because I won't be there.
Oh, after September.
Yes, after September.
2022.
It is until January, but I'm not in it till after September.
Don't bother with it.
Yeah, don't bother. If you go in February, The show's not even on at all. I remember thinking, you know, I go to the stage door and I always got time for people. And actually, I love the stage door. I love being able to meet people because you get the feedback from the show you've just done. And especially live things, you only have yourself and you've got your ruminations and your machinations about whether you've, you know, tell the story or been present, especially in a long run. We've been doing this quite a long time now. Mm. And stage door is like such a great place to get like feedback, or you do get like fans from other. I remember someone turning up at a theatre I wasn't even performing at actually, because Dave was doing like MD in some show. Mm-hmm. I think it was Blackpool Grand. And somebody came to talk to me because they knew I was there. I don't know how. I was just on holiday with him because I wanted to go and see his show. I think he was doing a show with Denise Nolan or something because he's like does what shows with her. And they had a folder of things, pictures of me.
Oh my
Stills
God.
That I've never seen from shows I've been
I mean, it
going...
wasn't with a long lens, was it? It wasn't.
And that's what I was thinking, how do you know I'm on holiday here? Oh, is that because you're now watching my partner?
Oh, God.
That's a bit weird. But I was still like
Were you still?
Yeah, I like to like be all right. But it's like, you know, stage door people who come, I like them. Unless they get a little bit stalkery, you know. But what I say to them is, have you seen the show? Are you going to see the show? And they go, oh. And they go, like the other day, someone went, yes. I went, no, you
aren't. That's convincing. That was bad acting.
I said, for your audacity, I'll sign it anyway, you know. But I like to say, look, when you come and see the show, come after the show, because then you're not just taking a signature of me. Come and see the show, and then come and then we can talk, you know. Because I don't like to give things, I like to think that there's a reciprocity to these things.
Well, also, you sort of want to... You want it to be about your work and that they haven't made you up too much in their head or sort of decided they know you in some ways. And I know that there's a massive crossover with crushes where you have chosen someone and then put a lot of.
But there might be like a lot of
them.
Projection in. Yeah.
There's a lot of
there.
Projection. I mean, in fandom generally, there's definitely a lot of projection.
But crushes, like, I suppose when you're. Crushes, like, on someone, like, in your class or. Mm. You know, someone, a teacher or like a, I don't know, director, choreographer, anything like that. I was doing a musical with David Baddiel. He's another one. He probably knows, though.
That you're in love with him?
That I'd had. Yeah, because I was on the film. I remember thinking, oh, he's quite stunning, actually.
Oh, my God. Like, so you did it develop or were you, did you have
a
crush before?
No, I didn't have a crush on him before. Right. It's just when he was director, he'd written this film, The Infidel. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, because he's brilliant. And he's quite brilliant and he's quite gracious. But I remember I think somebody had asked me, you know, so I was like, oh, who'd you like? I mean, I was with, like...
I was with
my partner, David. No, there's nothing, like...
It's almost a pass the time, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's very innocent, in all that.
Show, because it's so... It is, you know, acting is a lot based on fantasy and creating worlds and whatever. You sort of...
And maybe it's because that's what we do. We have such vivid imaginations in that way that we can surpass any boundaries that might be for, like, normal people. Because we can just go down some, like, thing where they become everything. Because we work so intensely, don't we?
Yeah.
Like, when we work, it's like it becomes this, like, microcosm. That tour becomes everything. Those people become everything. You know, so you can go off in flights of fancy. I say flights of fancy, not fantasy. Flights of fancy.
Yeah. It's sort of both, isn't it? But it's just understanding.
Yeah.
You know, I was saying earlier about getting older and learning what they are and understanding that they are going to end when the show ends.
Yeah, and
you know, and all of that. And that
more.
Nothing is going to happen and, you know, and whatever. Whereas at school or when you first have those crushes, it is more confusing, I think. You are sort of going, God, is this feels so strong that maybe it means something. It really means something about...
That's why young love is really crushing and heartbreaking.
Yeah, potent.
And feels like you're going to like the first time, like somebody, you really like someone in your class and then they just don't know you exist but you've created this thing where they think that you feel the same.
Yeah.
And it's completely
Well, in your head, they do feel the same.
So when they
speak
don't know
like
that,
you and they understand you and you've got this amazing connection and then the reality is...
Reality is they didn't know that I stayed, like, just trying to talk to them outside
the
door.
You did all of that homework.
And then you feel really crushed, exactly. You've done all that science homework for someone. I don't think I ever did that. But I remember to like have been able to talk through those kind of prisms. But then, you know, the moment they don't like laugh at your jokes, or you just think, oh no, not... they've gone off me now. And yeah. that can be the slightest thing.
Yeah.
Tiniest little thing.
But it's weird how that feels like a rejection, isn't it? When actually it's just you realising that they're not
exactly.
the, you know,
but I suppose that's like
the person you invented.
Well, I suppose like psychologically it's a the notion of like how do we feel rejected is quite interesting, I think. And especially in our industry, they've been able to navigate that in our industry and still have feel like you have self-worth is such a part of trying to understand being an artist. When you keep going for gigs, go for jobs and you don't get them, it doesn't mean anything about you.
No.
But that is totally connected with like human beings and the human condition. That what is rejection actually? What is it more intense at certain parts in your life? Like now I'm like in my 50s, you know, postmenopausal, like going through stuff, you know, which is really interesting. I feel as if I'm in my, like in a great like place in my life as a woman. And I'm always invariably like the union rep, like the equity rep, because I really feel strongly and passionately about socialism and stuff and Jeremy Corbyn and lots of things, actually. He's another one who had a bit of obsession with Jeremy Corbyn. That might have been because he was just really like a great human being. And I really, truly believe that we could come together through somebody who felt like that about humans. But I think the notion of rejection is something that, because we have to do, it's so acute to us because it's a part of our game. But actually, do we then, are we able to navigate it more and understand it quicker? Or just, we just get more opportunities to try to understand it?
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like every rejection hurts just as much as it ever did.
Yeah.
But the knowledge that I do recover and I can recover just is what gets you through. You see,
exactly.
The thing I know that I don't know how long it's going to take, but you know,
yeah,
you know, I think it probably is quicker depending on what it is.
Yeah.
But you sort of go, this is, I've now had, you know, a lost big break so many times.
Exactly.
It would not,
yeah.
Even if I'd got it, would not have turned into a big break anyway. It's,
but you don't want to get like indifferent or cynical about
no,
life.
No, you have to stay rubbery,
yeah.
Don't you?
You have to stay rubbery. That's a really great word. You have to stay rubbery, you know, especially like in your 50s. That's really like mega important.
It's all about limbering
so
up.
Literally stay rubbery. Stay rubbery, everyone.
Hashtag stay rubbery.
Hashtag stay rubbery. Hashtag menopause stay rubbery is a really interesting hashtag.
I think we have to wrap up, I'm afraid. But your biggest question, what's the one that you think?
I think he must have been.
I mean, he came to you
very quickly. And yesterday when I was thinking about it, when
and he spoke about him very warmly. It wasn't, you know.
Yeah, him and... No, it's just him.
It's just him.
Well,
was
it Tom Selleck that made me think that my geography teacher, because he looked like him?
Well, I don't think it was Tom Selleck that gave you the confidence to sing. So
yeah.
We're going to go with Colin Simpkins.
Simpkins.
Right,
Colin,
so I don't know if you remember this.
No, and Colin, if you're listening, I still think you're fabulous.
Oh, that's so
and
nice.
And now I can call you Colin. Because I'm now as old as probably you were, older than you were when I had a crush on you. It's like some kind of strange time-space continuum.
So I'm doing the maths here. Do you know what this is, this special weird maths?
No.
That people did in my generation? I'm so much younger than you.
I don't really know about Margaret, but she's 92. Is it probabilities?
No. I mean, I'm ashamed of how little actual maths there is in this, but there's just... It's
I was going to say, you're doing it with a pen and paper.
The L's, O's, V's, E's and S's in yours and Colin's names. But
oh
I'm
God.
Sorry to tell you, it's only 52%.
Yeah, because I've
listen,
got
that's
any.
The good thing, because you.
Yeah.
It sounds like you really like your partner and should
yeah.
probably
and we've
keep
got
giving
more.
Him a go.
We have got more of the same vowels, actually.
Wow, okay, yeah. Right, well, yeah.
Oh, can you...
Shall I do it within
do the
then?
Maths?
Okay, all right.
We've got
one
to have
L.
similar. We've got A's and E's.
No O's,
I's.
One V, two E's, no S's. Oh no, no, it's loads better. It's loads better. It's 70%. I mean,
oh,
that is
go.
Such a good result.
70%?
Yeah.
And like 100%
yeah.
in life. And winning. That
30%. What a lovely thing to say.
Yeah,
I hope
30%.
He does hear it now.
We've like discovered over like nearly 19 years. I think that's like the most amazing thing.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you very much,
Thank
Mina
you.
Anwar.
And Margaret Stay-Rubbery.
Crushed by Margaret Caborn Smith was hosted by Margaret Caborn Smith and produced by Sophie Black. Thanks to everyone at the amazing TVC Soho. And if you enjoy the podcast, please remember to like and subscribe as it helps people find where we are.